Y'all ready for a little birthday celebration? So I was getting online, looking up some stuff about Ray Wally Hubbard, and I didn't know he was an Oklahoman, but he got here as quick as he could. And you know, they talk about the cosmic cowboy thing. He is the most cosmic of the cowboys. He's a loco gringo. He's a dangerous spirit. He's a restless knight. He's eternal and low down. I mean, that's the darn truth of it. He writes his own Facebook posts. He doesn't mess with punctuation. I think he said something about, his wife said, maybe next time try for the second thought, but he's not doing that. So you should read what he says, because it's just like his song. It's just magical and mystical and wonderful. You know, he likes to visit the snake farm every once in a while. You might have heard that. He's the only guy I know who's a pal of Willie Nelson's and Ringo Starr's. Yeah, it's true. And you might know his wife, referred to lovingly as Mother Hubbard. She's a wonderful woman, Judy. And his son, Lucas, they're all great people. He makes good radio, too, Ray Wiley does. And tonight, he's going to be singing from the Grifter's Hymnal and many other songs for you. It's an honor to welcome a man who's 68 years old, and one day, ladies and gentlemen, Ray Wiley Hubbard.
Thank you.
Are you ready? This is a sing-along. Really? It goes Snake Farm. It just sounds nasty. Snake Farm. It pretty much is Snake Farm. It's Reptile House. Snake Farm. Opportunity to introduce the band. From Austin, Texas, that's Mr. Kyle Snyder right there.
This might be the first time that a number of you have appeared before me. So I would imagine after the first two songs, you're a little nervous. Probably kind of wondering what the refund policy is. There is none. It's a series. But now, pretty much, I've written these songs and I talk about them and I sing them. I wrote this next song here with a young guy named Hayes Carl. That's what a smattering sounds like. Hayes is a great young writer. It's really nice to see someone that young that you know, pretty much already burnt out and fried. Usually, you have to be my age to be that bitter and resentful. But the first time I met Hayes, I was down in Galveston. We were getting ready to do a show together. I've heard of Hayes, but I never had heard him perform. And so we're getting ready to go down there and do the show. So this buddy of mine said, well, here's a book you can read on the way down there. I said, what's it about? He said, it's about these French poets from the late 1800s. And I go, I don't want to read that. And he goes, no, you need to read it. So I started reading these guys' poetry and about these guys. And their poetry was like brilliant. They were breaking the rules of poetry up to that time. They had taken what the Romantic poets had done, just wadded that up and thrown that away, and were writing almost rock lyrics. In the late 1800s in France, it was brilliant. But they were despicable people. They drank. Yeah, they drank a lot. And they had, you know, they were just despicable, horrible people. They had affairs and just were rotten, really egotistical, grandiose, horrible people. But the writing was brilliant. So I get to Galveston and I hear Hayes perform, and I think to myself, this is how those guys must have smelled.
Poets breathe.
song, I made that up. I think Hayes might have recorded it. I don't know if you've ever listened to any of his stuff. But I put it on this record. It came out, I guess, about 5, 6 years ago now. I put it on this album. Put it on this album, and the title of the album was called A, Enlightenment, B, Endarkenment, Hint. There is no C. It's the worst title there's ever been for an album. A lot of journalists let me know that. And it's got this really creepy picture on the front. On the front of the album cover, I got my head cut off. I'm holding my own head in my own hand. I mean, I got on a nice suit. But you show it to little kids and it kind of scares them out. So it's got a horrible title and a creepy picture. So you've got to be asking, Ray, why would you do that? Well, you wouldn't be asking it in unison. I think Redneck Mother's going to be a train. Did I say that out loud? Well, I'll tell you why. Since you asked, I finally figured out that you get more attention burning down the barn than you do carrying out the trash. When I was a kid, my job was to carry out trash. All the trash got carried out every Wednesday. I was invisible. Nobody even speak to me. But you burned down the barn one time. I had relatives from Nebraska drive down to see me. So anyhow, this is a little trash. Sugar's got some sweetness to it, as do my baby's lips. And when she hears some old Howlin' Wolf, she got to move her hips. She ain't much for the bluegrass fiddle, she likes the bottomless slide. A little kick with a lot of bottom, let the rhythm need to take the rap. Listen up, look at here, I'm talking about the country blues. Thank you. have, though. It's called the Grifter's Hymnal, and it's got a lot of your favorite songs on it. You won't know that unless you buy it. This next song here, I wrote with a young girl named Liz Foster. She was in this band called Attrition with Kelly McQueen. And I never had written a song with a woman before. I'd written with Hayes and Slade, some of these other cats. But I never had written with a woman, so Liz said, "Right, we should write a song again." And I said, "Yes. Yes, we should, Liz. This would be an opportunity to look at the world through the perspective of a woman and then imagine that and then honor that viewpoint through music and lyrics." So I said, "Yeah, Liz, let's get together and write a song." So we got together to write this song. I said, "Well, what about this for the first line of the song?" She goes, "No, I don't think we want to say that." I said, "What about this? What about this for the first line of the song?" She goes, "I wouldn't feel comfortable singing that line." I said, "Well, Liz, I'm trying to see, you know, what it would be like if I were a woman. I'm trying to empathize here and see what that would be like." I said, "What about this?" She goes, "Oh no, we're not using that." At that point, I realized that if I was a woman, I'd be such a slut. More sexual when she sings it. Next song is called Name Dropping, and if you've ever seen me perform it, I don't really name drop or anything. I mentioned Hayes and because we wrote a song together and lived there, but a lot of times you'll see performers up here on stage and they'll go, "This song's written by a close personal friend of mine," and they name somebody really famous. And they may not know those people. What that is, that's a ploy. It's a ploy by saying this song is written by a close personal friend of mine and they named somebody famous. What they're trying to do is to convince the audience that they are a little higher up on the rungs of the entertainment ladder, leaned against the wall of illusion and broken dreams. Did I say that out loud? So anyhow, I refuse to do that. I think it's just disgusting. A couple of weeks ago, I was talking about this exact same subject with Willie. And, he agreed with me. Very disgusting. There's a wonderful cat here in Austin by the name of Mambo John Trainer. Just a soulful cat. Played with Resentments and Freedom to Fire Dolls and Tony Price. And we did a bunch of gigs together. And when he passed away, someone told me he passed away, and all of a sudden this verse, this little nursery rhyme, just kind of started going over and over in my head about Mambo John. And I kind of thought about rewriting it, but if I did, I wouldn't kind of acknowledge Mambo John's character. So when I sing this verse about Mambo John in the song, just so you'll understand, is every now and then, Mambo John would smoke a little pot. And he would drive out in the hill country south of Austin here to be driving on. He would see a hat, you know, see a dead animal by the side of the road. He would stop and make a hat out of it, which, you know, even if you disapprove of marijuana, you've got to admire that. But he was just a soulful cat. So I wrote about, there's always a treat to perform with. So I wrote about him and some other old cats I know. Never been to Birmingham. Makes his living with a whole lot of slide. Gonna take Willie for a whole ride. Here ain't let it pour. Ain't gonna stood a bar no more. If you got a mind to, you can sing. If you got a body, baby, shake that thing. Birthday thing here, especially in Austin. awesome, and at this estate here, which is just a wonderful, wonderful, very special place. And that's why I said, well, since I'm just going to have to drive up from Wimberley and I'm not going to have to fly a guitar, I said, I'm going to bring a very special guitar. This, I don't take this guitar out of the house that much. It's old, kind of gnarly and everything. But this is my grandfather's guitar. And he really wasn't much of a guitar player. He got it from some guy in southeastern Oklahoma back in the early 50s. You know, and but it had this on it. He would plug it into the radio and he'd play Wildwood Flower under the double E when I was a little kid. It was just, oh man, I said, Grandpa, let me play that guitar. I said, nah, can't play that guitar. And I go, why not, Grandpa? He says, you can't play a man's guitar unless he gives you permission. You just can't go pick it up and play it. I go, Grandpa, let me play it. He goes, no. And I guess he was trying to teach me to respect other people's property or something. But never let me play it even after I got older. And it'll be 29 years come January. I was out in California, out in L.A., and my grandmother called me out there and said, you need to come up here. Granddad's health's failing. So I drove from L.A. back up to Paris, Texas, where they were living at the time. It took me about 33 hours. I got up there, and my grandma came out and said, glad you're here. Granddad's died. Been asked about to go, where's Ray? Where's Ray? Wants to talk to you about the old guitar. I went in there, and he was on his deathbed, and he sold it to me. I feel terrible to this day. I really feel horrible that, you know, I wrote him a hot check. That's why I thought I would bring it to Austin. Where I live in Wimberley, Texas, where I've been there about 19 years, in order to get over to Bromfield, Texas, you got to go across Purgatory Road. So one day I'm driving on Purgatory Road and I'm in my van and I'm listening to some Lightning Hopkins on my CD player. I'm driving along listening to Lightning Hopkins and all of a sudden I look out the window. I'm driving along listening to Lightning Hopkins. I look out the window and this crow lands on this fence post and the crow starts calling. But I look over and it looks like the crow is singing exactly what Lightning Hopkins is singing at the same time on the CD player. I used to spend a lot of money to feel like that. and then the next song came on was this old Sam Cooke song. And I remember the tragedy of Sam Cooke when I was in high school and I followed that trial. And I thought it was a little sketchy. And later on, Sam Cooke's family thought that maybe it was that something else was going on. There was kind of a conspiracy that maybe there was some kind of Los Angeles nightclub hoodlum thug music publishing people involved. And so I followed that. And then the next song came on, this song I'd written about my family being bootleggers and gamblers and fortune tellers of Southeast Oklahoma, Northeast Texas when I was a kid. Anyhow, Lightning Hopkins, this Black Crow, Sam Cooke, and my family kind of twirled around my head for about 5-10 minutes, and I came up with this little ditty. And is Kelly still around here somewhere? I'd like to have her come out and sing a thing with you. Are you there? That's Kelly McGree right there. I believe I'm gonna count my blessings. a black hole on a fence post, singing away of Sam Hawkins' ghost. He sang when he said, I ain't breathing no more. Nailed my fence to the old barn door. I dragged my carcass on behind the shed. Just make sure you're pretty sure I'm dead. I asked the Ouija board if you keep what I tell, or if I stop and stick like a fuzz in hell. Take this opportunity to remind you that I am an acquired taste.
Next 20 years. Oh, but I had me a guitar.
some of you may know this, some of you may not, so I want to explain something to you. I'm going to explain that the real nightlife begins after the club's closed. It's what they call after hours. Because it's after the hours that the business is open. It's 2 a.m. and everybody's gone, but the band, the dealers, and Jack Jones. And then the girls from the Landing Strip Club come over after they put their clothes back on. So I'm at my booze and I'm sitting on my amp. I play a twist and shout, and this tall, a drink of water, walk in the light, she might have to shoot away out. She come up to me, she said, you know anything good on that guitar? I didn't say nothing, I just kept on playing. She said, have you ever heard this song called Folk Salad, Annie? I just kept on playing. She said, every time I hear that song, my insides feel like warm butter. Just won't take off my clothes and dance around in my underwear. Sit down in Louisiana, where the alligator goes to me. That's all I knew of it. But it was enough. So me and this dancer, we hit it off like a metaphor. Like a metaphor for a hydrogen bomb. It was enriched uranium, supercritical mass we was. A chain reaction. It was love and lust, mostly lust, but a mutual attraction. So there I was, boys, at 21 years old. I had it all. I had a fine stripper girlfriend and a gold top Les Paul. The future. I looked promising, but there were dark clouds. She was a beautiful girl, but she liked to drink a lot of tequila. That ain't all. And I come home 4 or 5 times, and she bought my Les Paul. So we broke up, and she went to Hollywood. She married her an actor. She got a job dancing on the Hudson Brothers TV show and modeling lipstick for Max Factor. I'm glad she done all right, you know. I got over her eventually. I'm glad that she's doing all right. Well, now me, I never really busted through the gates into the big, big time as a rock and roll star. For 40 years, I just carried around an old gold top guitar. But love and fate are mysterious things in this funky world. It was 25 years ago, I ended up marrying the Mother Blues door girl. We had us a boy, and he's 21 years old now. He played guitar. He ended up with my Les Paul gold top. He couldn't be here tonight. Kind of running a little bit of fever, and he didn't want to infect nobody, so he said, Dad, I better not go. I said, that's all right. You know, but I am very grateful for the time that I have shared the stage with my son Lucas, and I'm very grateful to share the stage tonight with Kyle Snyder right there. He's just laying down a groove that you could hammer nails through. And I'm an old cat. I just had a birthday. You know, I'm getting to be an old cat, but I'm very, very grateful. I'm still able to write these songs, and I'm still grateful that I can travel around and play them for people, and I'm very grateful that people will come out here and play my songs. And you know, the days that I keep my gratitude higher than my expectations, I have really good days, and this has been a fine day. Trying to like humble brag or show off or anything like that. But if you did happen to see Kyle and my son Lucas, a young bass player named John Michael on David Letterman, I guess a year ago last January, I need to explain something. I had a bunch of my buddies come up and say, man, I can't believe it was old big time national TV show and you forgot the words. You just left out two verses. You know, and I said, no, we had to do that on purpose because of a time limit. I just didn't forget. What happened was about 2 years ago, Logan, who's my agent, she gets this phone call, and it says, This is Jennifer from Worldwide Pants, and David Letterman would like to know if Ray Wiley would be on his TV show January 9th and sing the song Mother Blues. So Logan said, well, let me check his calendar and make sure he's not doing a happy hour gig in Waco. Those things are really hard to replace. So luckily I wouldn't. And she said, and Dave would like Ray to sing the song Mother Blues, but you only got 3 minutes and 30 seconds, so you're going to have to cut out a couple of verses. So we cut out some verses on purpose there, just so y'all just didn't forget, like I did last night. I was out kind of around California. We're putting up here at Sebastopol this festival up there, and all of a sudden I'm getting ready to do that harmonica ride, you know, in Drunken Poet's Dream. Earlier on, when I get ready to do that harmonica ride, so I'm getting ready to play the harmonica ride, and I look over the side of the stage, and there's Charlie Musselwhite just standing there, you know, one of the greatest harmonica players. I mean, just, you know, and all of a sudden my lips just, they locked. Just, it was an embarrassing thing. And, but after it's over, we got to meet him, and we just hung out with him. He's such a great, great, gracious cat. And we started writing some songs together. And then this is a little song that I wrote for him. It's called Mr. Musselwhite's Blues. I was born in Mississippi at a place that I did not choose. Doctor pulled me from my mama, said, son, welcome to the blues. Welcome to the blues. When I was 18, I come to Chicago in an old brown suit and wore shoes. Little Walter gave me a harmonica. He said, guess I'd help you if you got the blues. Yes, I'd save you if you got the blues. Thank you, guys. guys very much. People come up and ask me about songwriting. Well, not a lot of people, a few people. I think there was one guy one time. For some reason, I feel like I've got to tell the truth here. They come up and ask me about songwriting. You would think the question they would ask me would be about, you know, maybe rhyme scheme or metaphor or alliteration or something like that. But usually when they come up with what they ask me about songwriting, the question they ask is, why are you still doing this? And I guess about the best way I can explain it. I did this show out about 3-4 years ago now in California called the Hartley Strictly Bluegrass Festival. It's a wonderful, wonderful festival. They flew me out there and did this little festival, little solo thing. And after I finished my set, this young man came up and said, Mr. Hubbard, can I talk to you for a minute? I said, I'm kind of busy. I'm packing up my gear here. He said, well, can I tell you how inspiring you are? And I'm like, well, yeah. Go ahead. And so he said, well, please don't take this wrong, but I was watching you perform. I was really impressed with the commitment that you have to your music and your songwriting. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, please don't take this wrong, man. You're an old cat, and you're still writing these songs, and you're traveling around the world and playing them, and you're putting out these records that are just fantastic. Yeah, that's what he said. and he said, I play mandolin in this little bluegrass group out here. He said, I was just so impressed with the commitment that you have to your music. And he said, I too someday hope to have that commitment. I said, well, just never learned to do anything else. And you too can have this commitment.
Yeah.
Thank you guys very much. Here's this is a song here. A new record, don't come out sometime, I think, in April and everything. When I was about 15 years old, I was walking down Main Street in Hugo, Oklahoma with my grandmother. Right, so we're walking along, and all of a sudden walking toward us was this young woman about 20 years old. I was 15 years old, and I was walking, and walking toward us was this young woman about 20, and she was walking toward us, and she had like this kind of black hair kind of all piled up. She had on like false eyelashes and mascara and rouge and red lips and a sweater and a short skirt and these boots. And she just had this look about her that I liked. And I thought she was just gorgeous. And so we're walking along there, and all of a sudden as she meets us, and my grandmother and I are walking this way, my grandmother looks at her and goes, "Too young, right? Too young, rotten." And I like that. I remember that for some reason. And so I'm writing this book. And so I'm going through these old pictures and everything. I find a picture of my wife, Judy, when she was like 20 years old. And she had that same look. And by the way, anything I say here tonight stays here tonight. So anyhow, a little song I wrote for my wife, Judy. Pretty remarkable woman. She actually was the door girl at Mother Blues when she was 16 years old. And then didn't know her back then. And I ran into her again, I guess, about 25 years ago. And I asked for a song for my wife, too. Thank you. call Cross Canadian Rag Beach. It's a still old band, and just really like that. They broke up, which is, you know, it happens. You know, the Beatles broke up, and I was still upset about that. You know, things happen and everything. So anyhow, we were talking about this little song I wrote for him.
I just can't see. guys very much. Was there anybody here from Texas? Let me explain this. What are the odds of that? I was down in Corpus Christi. These people came in. They were rich and they were drunk. And they were from Nashville. I like rich people. I like people from, drunk. I like people from you know, but Nashville. But they, all three of those qualities in two people can be a little overwhelming. So they came in. They started yelling out all these songs. I said, I don't know those songs. They said, it's the latest top 40 country songs from Nashville. And I said, I still don't know them. They said, I said, down here in Texas, we write our own songs. I said, that's the way it's been. It's Blind Lemon Jefferson. That's what we do. So anyhow, they got really kind of upset and grandiose and all this stuff. And they started talking about, the top 40 country thing. And I said, well, people, in my opinion, the music coming out of Nashville today is just like, it's like repulsive. And they said, what? They said, how can you say that? And I said, man, I'm an old cat. And I said, the problem I got, besides the music just being kind of like, bad 80s rock and roll with fiddles and everything, is I said that the country western singers today, they don't even have country western singing names. Like when I was growing up, country western singers had names that were country western singing names. Willie, Waylon, Johnny, June, Loretta, Tammy. Porter, Dolly, Ernest. Now those were names for country singers. I mean, today you got like Shania and Toby and Tim and Taylor, and those are good names, but those aren't country western singing names. Those are names for figure skaters. They got upset about that. And I said, well, so anyhow, I went out in the alley, and for some reason I was able to write the chorus in the first verse.
Mr. Bond was the best guitar player I ever heard.
cooler than the 13th floor elevator. So screw you. We're from Texas. Screw you. We're from Texas. Screw you. We're from Texas. We're from Texas. Screw you. We're from Texas. Screw you, Nashville. We ride our own song down here. Nobody tells us what to say. I want to do. Somebody said, are you going to do the song Up Against the Wall, Redneck Mother tonight? And I said, you know, it's a pretty nice play. There's not even a one neon beer sign. So I said, so, you know, how would you feel weird? You know, are you going to do it? And I said, man, I don't know. I said, I never know what I'm going to do. And I said, well, we really came a long way to hear you sing Up Against the Wall at Redneck Mother thing. And I said, well, man, I don't know. I said, if you don't do it, we're going to be so disappointed in you. And I remember one time I went to see Bob Dylan. I really wanted to hear Bob sing Masters of War, but he didn't do it, or he didn't, I didn't recognize it. Are you at that gig? Yeah. I don't even think Gene Smith knew what they were playing. He was in a band. So anyhow, I left with this empty feeling. So over here, people that have that void in your life and only having me sing Up Against the Wall, Redneck Mother can feel, it really may not say a lot for either one of us. But let me explain it. A long time ago in a land far away called West Texas, if you was a young, long-haired, cosmic cowboy, a hippie, Austin musician, it was a very dangerous time. This was before Willie Nelson sang at the Armadillo World Headquarters in Austin, Texas, bringing the hippies and the redneck together through the power of damn good country songs. This isn't one of those. It's born in Oklahoma.
Okay, you're on your own.
Tempo. Tempo. Tempo, people. I think my watch stopped. CDs and hats. I don't even know what all I got for sale out there, and I was hoping to sell a bunch tonight, but I tell you what, after that, why don't you take the money you're going to spend on one of my CDs and maybe buy yourself a pitch pipe and a metronome. and you know who you are. That really was the best that's ever been done. No, it's Aaron's out there, the hawk, he's out there, so if you need anything, Aaron will take care of you and everything. And once again, that's Mr. Kyle Snyder right there on him. I'm a great believer in the First Amendment, and a lot of people are really kind of upset with all the violence and graphic language going on in hip-hop and rap and everything, even have congressional hearings about this. And some people think maybe that First Amendment was just meant to be a suggestion that maybe we ought to have people look over the shoulders of songwriters. Go, you can't say that in a song. You know, you can't kill that guy in that song. But, you know, you can't be doing all that crap and stuff and everything. But the First Amendment is first. So that ought to tell you something, that those guys thought that freedom of speech is a very, very important thing. And I'm so grateful for it. If it wasn't for it, I wouldn't have a repertoire. You should have a problem. You should have a problem with all the, you know, graphic language and music and everything. And you may not be aware of this, but in music, Ralph Stanley and Bill Monroe have killed more people than Ice-T and 50 Cent. And there's the Lehman Brothers, too. So there's a knife fight, and they wrote a song. So anyhow, I'm very grateful for that. But thank you guys so much. Last night I went downtown to a little place called Johnny. Let me do this one real quick. Thank you guys so much. I'll tell you, I can't leave you something that gnarly and out there, because you've been so nice. This is a song here called The Messenger. Back in high school, myself and three other fellas decided to form this band. So we formed this band. We'd been together about 2 or 3 months, and one of the guys suggested that we get instruments and learn to play them, because we were going nowhere. So we got a mandolin, some bongos, a banjo, and a kazoo. And we went nowhere a lot faster. So for about the next 20 years, I just kind of beat the hell out of a guitar. When I was 41, I came out of this honky-tonk fog I'd been in, and a fellow gave me a book. It's called Letters to a Young Poet, and by Rilke. There was a line in there about fear. What's on the other side of it, I didn't realize, so I read this, and I had this phobia, this fear, just woven into the very fabric of my existence. So. I mentioned where I grew up. I grew up in Northeast Texas and Southeast Oklahoma. I grew up outside Hugo, Oklahoma, in this little house. We had this little house by the side of the highway. It was a little blue house, and painted on the front of our house was a giant red hand. It was like 5 feet by 8 feet, had an eye in the middle of it. Had little quarter moons and pyramids and cards. And my grandmother was a fortune teller up in Southeastern Oklahoma. Hugo, Oklahoma used to be known as Circus Town, USA, where a lot of these circuses would make their winter homes. You know, not like Barnum and Bailey, but kind of these third-rate convict circuses. And my grandmother was the fortune teller for the Valentine Circus, which is still in existence today, only nice little carnival. So during the summer, she would travel with them as Madame Rita, the fortune teller. But then during the winter, she had her psychic reader there at our house as a little kid. And I'd walk around as a little kid, and there'd be the giant red hen right there with the eye in the middle of it. Terrifying. I, you know, still talk about it. And she was a wonderful woman. As she got older, started drinking a little bit. And we would stand out on the front porch. These cars would drive by, and she would yell, "I knew you weren't gonna stop." She was good. She was never wrong. And then she'd take another little drink. Grandfather up there in Southeast Oklahoma was what they call a bootlegger. Remember that term, bootlegger? Yeah. That he, you know, smuggled books into Arkansas. My relatives in Arkansas hate it when I say that. This is Calvin Messenger. If Kelly's still around, she run off. I'm going to come out and help me. But I read that line by Rilke over there. Overcame this fear of embarrassment. At age 42, I called up this fellow and I said, "Well, jacket is borrowed, I'm wearing my tie, my honey eyes in my face. I am not looking for loose diamonds or pretty girls with crosses around their necks. And I don't want for roses and water. I'm not looking for. This old poet, he said, our fears are like dragons guarding our most precious treasures. I am not looking for loose diamonds or pretty girls with crosses around their necks. And I don't want for roses water. I'm not treasure. Thank you guys so much. I had a wonderful time.
Happy birthday, Ray! Thirty-nine has never looked so good.
Thank you very much. Let me do this one here since I got Kelly here. Just know that I wish you'd help me sing on real quick. And thank you guys so much. I tell you what, this one wonderful, 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 wonderful venue. And I tell you what, so nice to be here in Austin. You got to move, you got to move, you got to move, child. Thank you guys. And thank all the sponsors for this thing too. All right.